Salam and good evening to you, worthy friend. Please, please, come closer.
Too close, a little too close.
Hello and welcome to episode 46 of the Disney Brit Podcast for Wednesday, the 21st of July 2010. Thank you once again for joining us, and let's let you know what we've got coming up on this edition of the show. Two segments for you. The first, the usual news and rumours, which Juz and Craig join me for. And then we're going to take an in-depth look at Toy Story 3, as it was released in the UK this week. We want to give you our opinions on what we thought of the film, and also give you some audio from the press conference that Craig was able to attend last week. And that's pretty much it for this show. So sit back, relax, and let's get on with this edition of the Disney Brit Podcast. Welcome to the news for this edition of the show, and as always, joining me is our favourite, well, I say favourite, he's alright, it's Juz.
That's horrible. Hello Disney pod people, whatever Adam,
whatever.
And also our roving reporter who now hobnobs with the rich and famous media types, it's Craig.
Hello everyone. Squirrels!
He eats hobnobs.
Do you know what, talking of biscuits, we've gone back in time, but we had Foxy's Golden Crunch yesterday with our cup of tea. Very nice biscuit. Thank you, Mrs. Duncan, for those.
Why is that relevant?
Because he said hobnob, it's a biscuit, it's called a tangent. You know,
no, but then I could sit there and go, yeah, I once had fig rolls. So what?
No, but you didn't have them yesterday, did you?
But we weren't talking about yesterday.
He said hobnobs.
I don't want a biscuit war. Biscuit war later. You can throw bourbons at him later.
You say, I know he's not that great. And now he's like, ooh, I had a biscuit yesterday.
So just pick on him rather than pick on each other.
Anyway, let's get on with the show, shall we, before we end up going through the whole confectionery department of Sainsbury's. But just a few things I want to point out with you to start off with. Alex Duffield, who listens to the show, contacted me earlier on today to ask me if I could ask you guys, that's everybody, not just you two are listening now, if you've got a map of Port Orleans Riverside, and not a, you know, an actual handheld hard copy map, not one off the internet, that you've got. He's looking for one. You're going out there and you stand there, something like that, he'd like to get hold of a copy. And if you have got one and you'd like to pass it on to him, you can email us or contact us via Facebook with your contact details and we'll get Alex in touch with you.
Is it swap shop, this?
Yeah.
I've got an old teddy I'd like to swap for an iguana.
This book called The Mini Mouse. I want to swap for something that's got some facts in it.
You'll get anything for that, mate.
No?
No.
Hasn't Andre got one of those maps on his site he can print off?
He doesn't want a printed one. He wants the real one. Have you not listened to Adam?
A real one, not a printed one.
I try not to, Juz. No. You told me when I started this, don't listen to Adam, just listen to you. That's what I mean.
why doesn't Adam pick it up or you pick it up when you're over there?
We could do.
I don't know how he might need it sooner than that, I don't know.
I don't think he does. Is there a time limit on this? Alex, tell us.
Tell us, Alex. Also, I want to say thank you to everyone that came last night, because we're calling this on a Monday, to the live chat. We had all sorts of jokes from Craig. There was some dodgy joke going on about a spider behind me or something I never really caught on to as we're doing the show. But thank you for those people who came along. Also, one other thing, if you go over to our forum, iNorlando.com/forum, you will find there is now a Disney Brit Football League. And this is basically people who use the forum who also like football. We've got a football league basically set up with all Premier League players, which you can come along and join in. All of the information is on there. Details about how to join, all those sort of things are over there. I've set my team up today. Craig, you've not set yours up yet, have you?
I haven't. No, I haven't read time yet. I will do.
You haven't one, Joz?
I'm definitely doing it. Yeah, I just haven't had time today. Because can I just point out, me and Craig are still working. Yeah. You're on vacation.
I'm actually working very hard at the moment. I've had a very busy day. So that's up, set up there as well. Right, let's get on with some Disney Brit news then and share with you all the different bits that have been going on to do with us, to do with Disney News, Walt Disney World, etc. Summer, of course, is once again, upon us.
Once a pen, twice a pen.
Twice a pencil.
Three times a biro.
Four times a crayon.
You know what? There's a song in that. Once, twice, three times a biro. So obviously once again, I still can't get it out upon us. It means that it's time for the team to go on their separate holidays and we'll disappear enough, which means that the Disney Brit podcast won't disappear, but it will be changing over the next couple of shows. We're still going to bring you a load of new interesting segments, some that we've already recorded and some that we've got to do. It means that the news and rumours will be missing for the next couple of shows after this one, because obviously we can't record those at the time because we're all going to be away in different places. But episode 48, which is not this episode, not this episode after, is a special show because it's going to mark our 2-year anniversary since we started it all. And with this in mind, we are asking all of you guys to ring our voicemail numbers and to wish the podcast a very happy second birthday, basically.
I don't want them to ring in. I just want them to send birthday cake.
We're hoping to play those at the end of the second show. So far, we've already got sort of 4 or 5. We're closing it really towards the end of this
month. Listener base. Woohoo!
Hey, no, we are closing it towards the end of this month. We'd like some more. If you do want to call us in, numbers are 0121 288 2858 or 407-545-7980. But we want to make the second anniversary show a special one, and I'm working on lots of little bits and pieces for that to make it a little bit different. Okay, let's start with some Disney news then. Juz, you start us off today.
Don't feel like it, because
okay,
I'm not going anywhere. And you said, the team's all going on holidays and away. And I'm not, because that was almost a little dig at me.
Yeah, you're going on holiday from work.
Oh, yeah, it's just the same, isn't it? Stupid me. Right. I'll take the news then. Mickey is on tour in the UK. And it's not Mickey Rooney. It's Mickey Moose. Mickey is taking his camper van on tour.
Mickey Moose.
Mickey Moose. He's taking his camper van on tour. Look, I need to get this sentence done. Mickey Moose is taking his camper van on tour around the UK this summer, visiting, can I just say, it's meant to be shopping centres, but Adam has put it as shampooing centres across the country, so it must be hairdressers he's going to. The tour is in conjunction with the Play Hoops Disney and Mickey Moose Clubhouse. Unfortunately, the Lakeside shopping centre dates have been passed. This is old news then, but if you want to meet Mickey, then you need to go to the following locations. St. Enoch Centre. Is that Enoch Centre? What kind of name's that? Glasgow, 24th of July, 9 till 5, or the 25th of July, 11 till 5:30. They're long hours. Adam doesn't understand those kind of hours. Westfield Shopping Centre, London, 31st of July, 9 till 5, 1st of August. Josie's birthday! Be quiet. 12 till 6. The Metro Centre in Newcastle. Why does he just stay in one area, Mickey?
I don't know. It just
he's wasting petrol here.
It's really random.
Yeah, 10th of August, 9 till 5. 8th of August, 11 till 5. He really does work Sunday hours here. Bristol Balloon Fiesta. What on earth is the Bristol Balloon Fiesta?
Oh, it's brilliant. They have loads and loads of hot air balloons.
Okay. The Bristol Balloon Fiesta, 12th to the 15th of August. Bullring Birmingham, that's actually a real bullring where he's been doing holly. 21st of August.
Bullring shopping centre.
No, it isn't. It's a real bullring. Holly! 21st of August, 9 to 5. 22nd of August, 11 to 5. Smith's Toy Store, Sheffield. Yeah. It's gone from a shopping centre to a toy shop.
Wait till you read the next bit.
9 to 5. 29th of August, 11 to 5. The website that states that Mickey will not be appearing this day, but he can still come and play in his camper van. That sounds a bit like kid grooming to me. Check for any appearance of Mickey with the store before traveling. So there's no Mickey there.
No, apparently not. It said he will not be travelling on this day, but there are 2 days. So I don't know whether he's going to be appearing at one or he's not going to be appearing at all. From what I understand, it's just going to be his camper van, which I find really bizarre.
Oh, that's a bit funny, isn't it? Don't go to that one, then. Go to the one where you're going to meet Mickey Mouse.
I think we're going to go to the Bullring in Birmingham.
I think you should go and see the balloons.
What I didn't realise is we were passing, because this news came out quite late. It was sort of announced on Playhouse Disney and on their website, and it was announced after the first date had gone. So I saw it at Craig's house in the morning before we left, and we drove past Lakeside Shopping Centre.
He didn't tell me when he was here, though, did he?
We drove past Lakeside Shopping Centre on the day he was Lakeside Shopping Centre. On the day that he was there and didn't even know he was there. Otherwise, we could have gone in.
We're now at Craig's house. He's my best mate. Oh, we're going on holiday together.
He's really like a small little kid tonight, isn't he? Right, let's move on then. So, Craig, what have you got?
Well, because I am now, obviously, in the movie business, wow. I've got a bit of news now about Tinkerbell, because Disney is preparing for a new live-action romantic comedy, or rom-com, as we like to say in the business, based around Peter Pan's famous fairy, Tinkerbell. I could have said lots of things then, but I restrained myself. I just knew what I was thinking. Actor Elizabeth Banks is set to take on the title role. The film will be produced by Adam Shankman, Jennifer Geekgott, and McGee. Elizabeth Wright Shapiro and McGee are set to write the script. No specific details have been released. Pardon, it's going to be a film about Tinkerbell, and she's going to be a little bit naughty. So I don't know what rating it's going to have, but we'll find out.
Yeah, thank you, Michael Winner. Right.
Looks like it was.
I thought I'd put that
it's
in.
It's only a commercial.
It's interesting to see they're trying to do the live action thing again. What with it happening twice? They did it for Hook, didn't they? And then the Peter Pan in about 2003 or something like that. And now they're going to attempt to do it again. Be interested to see how they can make Tinkerbell into a romantic comedy.
They have done other live action films before this, you know. I do not realise. It's not like something different for Disney in a departure.
Oh, right. Okay. I'm sorry. Oh, yeah.
Okay.
I'm intrigued how they can make it into a romantic comedy. It almost sounds a little bit like they're going to go a bit enchanted with it. That sort of style, I wonder. I don't know. It's just me, Geoff. I'll talk to myself. Don't worry, you just sit there very quietly. That's fine. Let's head into Walt Disney World. Then we're going to do some Disney news. And the first one isn't news as such. It's a bit of a advanced warning of something that may possibly be happening. Now, for the past few years, Disney have increased their ticket prices for the parks by around $5 each on the 1st of August. It happened
just his
on
birthday.
On Joseph's birthday. If it happened on 2008, it happened again in 2009. The chances are the tickets are going to go up again in 2010. There's been no announcement, but as it's happened the past 2 years, possibility is it's going to happen again this year. So if you are on the cusp of saying, you know, shall we buy our tickets? You know, do we wait? Do we not? It's probably worth you doing this. This is not for British ultimate tickets. They usually stay at the same price, but we're talking about if you're in America and you're looking to get your Magic Your Way tickets, the chances are 1st of August they may go up. So if you're thinking about getting your tickets, you want to get them beforehand, it might be worth getting them before the 1st of August, otherwise you might pay a little bit extra. And hopefully we're right, otherwise we're going to have angry people emailing us telling us you made me do it.
Just as a little announcement here, just to be safe for the podcast, prices can go up as well as down. Please check with your financial advisor before purchasing tickets.
Lovely.
Bit of requests upon, yeah, anyway. Right, there we go. Okay, Juz, what you got?
The official Disney blog today has confirmed that the Kona Island Sushi Bar that opened for a tryout period over a few months is to remain permanent dining location at Disney's Polynesian Resort. I love sushi. The small 20-seater eatery will continue to serve coffee and pastries during the morning and daytime. The menu will switch to sushi at 5 p.m. The menu has a load of great things like volcano roll, which is spicy tuna, lauai with tempura crunch at $13 night. And by the way, this is not a cheap sushi place.
No, it's not.
Even the cucumber roll, which is $8.99. The California lure roll, which is $12.99. Oh. Shrimp tempura roll is $12.99. These are, I have not seen the size of the plates you get with these, so I'm being, you know, could be critical, but it isn't cheap, which is annoying. I love sushi.
It's interesting. I don't know, because I've not had sushi in the parks in Epcot. I wonder whether these prices are similar to what you would get in Epcot.
I don't know. I had it as a starter over at What's it, teppanyaki? Yeah, I don't remember it being as dear as that. I thought it was definitely sub $10 when I had it as a starter, and I got a lot on that, and I really enjoyed that. So it could be a steak. I could do some pictures. We need pictures of this.
We do. So if anybody's heading out there, to the Polynesian specifically, and you get a chance to go in, do please let us know what the portion sizes are like. That would be good.
I want to do Man versus Food in Disney. That's I'm going to put that idea forward.
How awesome would that be?
Man versus Craig, Food round it. Sorry.
Craig put that idea forward 10 years ago.
Just cut me off. Just cut me off. Doesn't bother me.
Craig, did you go over to the sushi bar at all?
No, because the stupid thing is I don't eat fish. And I know you can get vegetarian sushi, but just the idea of it just puts me off a bit, to be honest with you. So no, I didn't.
Weird.
No, I'm not weird.
Sushi is great. I often get goldfish and just have a quick munch on them.
Right, okay, moving
on. Let's jazz anywhere near your pond. Oh, there's a nice koi carp.
They're just fish floating around Southport with just bites taken out of them.
Yeah. Between two slices of pizza.
Fish fingers, they're sushi, aren't they? They're just, you know, just defrost them and have them cold.
Yeah, battered sushi, fish. Sushi between pizzas. Oh, yeah.
A sushi burger. No, that won't work. Right, Disney are beginning to offer homeschool programs, and they're going to be happening on the first one's happening on September the 8th, where homeschool students can get a peek into the professional careers in the performing arts over at Disney Hollywood Studios. Now, the presentation for homeschool students will feature cast members involved in things such as scenic design, Imagineering costumes, and show directing. And during the visits, homeschool students will be invited to participate in other learning activities as well. This is going to be happening from the 7th to the 9th as part of Disney's Youth Education Series. The full schedule and all the information and events at Epcot and Downtown Disney and all those bits and pieces and ticket information can all be found if you go to disneyyouthgroups.disney.go.com and then follow the Homeschool Days link, and you'll find all the stuff there. Some of the offerings include things such as Disney Animation Magic, Synergy in Science, there's Career Discovery, and Disney's Captivating Moments. There will also be additional programs that will be held later on in 2011. That's on the 24th and the 25th of January, and they're going to be happening over at Disney's Animal Kingdom. If you do want to go over there, you can go and take part in the homeschool program. Not necessarily as much use for those of us in the UK, but maybe for those in the US.
I shouldn't say that, because what could happen is they need an opening for someone to look after this homeschool thing in the UK, and that's your ticket out of here, Adam.
Yeah, how cool would that be? Disney, if you're listening, I'd be more than happy to run your homeschool program from Walt Disney World.
Exactly. So this is Adam, and I second him just to get rid of him. Make sure you make him work Monday evenings, please.
Yeah.
Yeah. He'd only apply for a part-time job because that's all his resume would allow him to do.
Excuse me, young man, I'm just getting ready for work. I'll head down out of my bedroom and go into my office. Oh, I'm there. Yeah. I'm here. Yeah.
He's worked all day today. He's been like a little trooper, me and him.
We have, Jazzy, yeah.
Supporting each other in our nasty daily work life.
Hmm. You're just looking forward to 7:30 when we'll be half an hour late to record this.
Yeah. Traffic was terrible.
Anyway, should we move on, Craig? Some happy news.
Unfortunately, I haven't got any happy news. Walt Disney World monorails were out of service briefly Saturday evening after a monorail pilot received an electric shock while flipping a switch, authorities said. The pilot was mildly shocked in the arm while switching on a beacon that identifies the beam the monorail is travelling on. A fire official and Disney said he was taken to Florida Celebration Hospital by ambulance, where he was treated and then later released. His injury was said to be minor. Park guests were removed from the area while the pilot was being treated at the platform. The monorails were down for about 20 or 30 minutes. A Reedy Creek Fire Department spokesman likened the incident to accidentally contacting a light switch with a finger. The voltage was low, he said. When he reached up, it zapped him, said Bo Jones, deputy fire chief. It's not very good, though, is it? Even a little zap. He shouldn't be getting any zaps.
No, but I don't know.
Another incident, though, isn't it?
We all spark ourselves on a lecky point, so we don't sit down for 20 or 30 minutes on a platform and get sorted.
Is this all because of everything that's happened, though? Are we really... Are Disney having to be super oversensitive over everything that happens with the transportation system at the minute?
I think he's obviously taken his shoes off and rubbed his feet up and down, then touched the switch.
They'll stop selling balloons now because of the static electricity.
Yeah. I think you're probably right. They're just oversensitive, and once again, the news jumps on it. It's no big deal. I think they probably overreacted.
Well, yeah, that's one of the reasons I put it in, really, was because of the fact that I looked at it, read it, and thought, you know what? Yeah, okay, got an electric slot shot from flipping a switch. It's not serious, really. But it seems that people have jumped on the bandwagon, and I suppose we have as well by reporting it. But it does seem that everything is just being reported at the moment. Right, let's head into Magic Kingdom then and do some theme park news. And just one piece of news from the Magic Kingdom for you to do with the Wishes Dessert Party. Although currently isn't really Wishes, it's the Summer Nightastic Fireworks Spectacular. But it doesn't matter what the name is, they are still offering the dessert parties, not only until the 14th of August as they were doing, but they've now extended the dates until the 29th of December 2010. This extension was only announced this past weekend, so there is currently pretty good availability for most of the spaces up to the 29th of December. But if you want to get in early and get yourself booked. You'll need to call Disney Dining on 407-939-3463. Easy to remember, 407-WDW-DINE. Prepayment is required. It's just over $27, including tax per adult. It's about $27.14 or something along those lines. It seems to have gone up in price to what it was before.
I'm just not going in response to that. I'm disgusted.
Okay.
I think it's a lot of money. You know, we were having this chat with some of our little friends, weren't we, about going to the dessert party, and it would be like $90 for me to take the kids. I just think it's a lot of money for an evening just to sit there. And I mean, I know you get chocolate and you get a good view, but you know, this, you can get lots of good views in the Magic Kingdom, and $90 is a lot. I'd rather go and buy an ice cream. And
it is an hour's worth of serve yourself dessert. I don't know how much dessert you could really eat in an hour, but I'm not certain it's going to be $27 worth, is it? Well, I'll give it
just
a good
watch
try.
Me, yeah.
Well, yeah, we'll have a good go. I mean, I wouldn't eat for 2 days. But I think when they brought this out, it was like $15. When we tried to go, Adam, last year, and then they kind of stopped it because it all got booked up. I think it was only about $15, and they saw it was really, really popular, so they doubled the price.
Good. There you go. Disney. So, yeah, they have. Right, head out of Magic Kingdom, jumping on the monorail, heading over to Epcot. It seems, Juz, it's your turn this week to have all the food-related news. So what have you got for us?
Hang on a second. I've just electrocuted myself on the monorail. I need about 30 minutes to get myself sorted, and then I'll be with you. I'm okay again. Okay, Fat Man News. It goes to Jules like that. It's Food and Wine Festival. Yes, our favourite time of the year when we like to hear Craig phone up and just tell us about everything he's eating. So, we can tell you what's happening in the kiosks. Okay, over to Belgium. Well, of course, it's steamed mussels with roast garlic cream.
Nope.
Yeah, I'm not a fan.
Freshly baked waffles with berry compote and whipped cream.
Yeah, I'm all over that.
I'd have a Mickey waffle anyway, so I wouldn't go with that.
Oh, come on, you've got to go for it anyway. Belgium.
They taste different, though, don't they?
Well, not really, because, of course, I told you it's a World Fair that they became Belgian waffles that they're really made in America anyway, and just gave them the name Belgium. And you could also get, in the way of drinks, wife beater, as we know it. Already known as Stella Artois.
It's reassuringly expensive in this country, so goodness knows what it's going to be like in Epcot.
Yeah, chocolate iced coffee.
Yuck.
Leffe. What's Leffe?
That's blonde
What's
beer.
What's righty?
Oh, I hate blonde beer. Ugh. And Ho Garden.
Or is that That's just also a blonde beer.
I hate blonde beers. They're disgusting. You know, it's got no taste. Let's see, located by Canada, we have charcuterie and cheese. Is that right?
Something like that.
Cheese fondue with croutons and roast potatoes. I like cheese fondue. I will probably wear my polo neck jumper and my 70s gear to that. Applewood smoked beef, duck and ham. They're different animals. It's not all the same animal. Bit of a strange one, that duck. Martini.
It's the right choice.
Yeah, Ace Joker hard cider. Excellent.
Can you drink that if it's hard?
Well, lad. It's like Scrumpy over here.
Don't come near me.
Scrumpy Jack.
It's like Scrumpy over here. I love Scrumpy. And McMurray Ranch Solomon Coast Pinot Noir.
Lovely.
Like a bird's wine. Yeah, next.
Yeah, just a bottle of wine. South Korea, well, that is, they bomb you, and then they declare it wasn't them. And then the kiosk next door is North Korea, and they just get into a fight. South Korea, we have lettuce wraps with roast pork and kimchi slaw. That sounds really nice, you know.
That does sound good.
This
will be your favourite. Yeah, I'm about to say this has got for you.
Short ribs.
Juzzy has saved on his paste, basically, whenever you press Control and V on his keyboard, and he puts it up at the weekend and just says, Barbecue ribs are in, and that's it. It's on your Facebook stages like every weekend.
I like my barbecue. I did shrimp popcorn this week.
How do you do that on a barbecue? Doesn't it fall through the hole?
No, it wasn't a barbecue.
Shrimp popcorn. Have you been watching The Muppets?
No, it was a most excellent. Everyone thought it was brilliant. On my birthday, I'm attempting blooming onions. So I've already got everything ready for that. So anyway, barbecue short rib, which is great, but then they go and lob some rice with it. What's the point of that? You want fries to mop up the sauce. I would have thought it was a South Korean dish, but am I wrong?
I don't know. I don't know whether it is or not.
Honey ginger tea, yeah, whatever. Jiro Kasu Suju, which is a blonde beer. And Bo Boko Boko Jujuju, which is black raspberry rice.
Fletcher's has just butchered the South Korean menu.
Now, they're just...
Like, what are they going to do? Invade me? Oh, damn. Also, the seminars. Now, the seminars I thought really cool. I don't know why Craig hasn't been to one yet. Let's see what they've got going. Authentic taste seminars. Each of these 30-minute seminars celebrates the origins, properties, and history of some of the world's purest ingredients, like ribs. Enjoy a lively, informative presentation by subject authorities, and these are Friday to Sunday, 2 p.m. to 6 p.m. and it's included in the Epcot price admission, so they've obviously made some mistake there, that, you know, it's unlike Disney not to charge. There must be a gift shop at the end of it.
You don't get any free food, you've got to pay for the samples.
Yes. Authors Without Borders is where Adam will come along and bore you about his book. Listen to renowned authors from food and wine industry speak about their popular topic. See, that would just get me hungry.
Yeah,
that is where Disney would have a food shop on the way out. You'd be going, and just go,
Friday. I'm recording a Disney cakes show again, anywhere.
I haven't got to that yet, have I?
No, I'm saying, are they not doing one? They're not recording a Disney cakes show.
They probably are, because they did the girlies and then they did the villains.
The villains was cool. The
villains was brilliant. If you haven't seen it, Food Network usually repeats it.
They do, and Scar's head falls off, and it's very funny.
And it's Food Network. It's part of the Food Network challenge, but it's absolutely, absolutely. The cakes are awesomely tall.
They really are. Anyway, back to where we were.
different ones. We're in Seasons of the Vine. This is a 7-minute journey that provides behind the scenes introduction to wine growing. Here's a great mash it up, drink it. Wine and beverage seminars, 45-minute seminars to meet wine principle, learn a few useful wine tips, open the bottle, drink it. that costs you as well, $8 and $12. No,
that's $12, yeah.
Daily culinary demonstrations, learn from the post, 45-minute culinary session, meet the featured chef and wine presenter, picking up cooking tips, and best of all, taste the demonstrated dish and wine pairing. And it costs you again $9 and $13. They shouldn't be charging these, they should be free.
No.
Do you know what? If I lived there, I would do the seminars, because I think my family would kill me if I went and tried to do them on a vacation. But the Food and Wine Festival, I would just live for that if I was there. I'd be there all the time. I think it one of my an event I really want to go to.
That would be cool. Juz, do you want to do the next bit of news? Just as it's very, very quick, there's not really much to discuss about it.
Oh, right, that told me then. Yeah, there's some signs at Epcot.
Yeah, there's some new signs at Epcot. That's really bad.
Directional signs have been spotted along the walkway from Future World to World Showcase, giving people a clear understanding of which way is quicker to which country. I would move these round just to annoy people. The beige signs use a clear font, although both give directions to American Adventure. Well, they both have to give directions to American Adventure because it's in the middle, lad.
Yeah.
Beige sounds a bit like the AA signs over here. Are you sure the AA haven't been over there and just put back these brown?
They're quite nice looking signs. They're quite clear, which is better than the older ones where they're slightly larger.
Why would you do it?
Because you can.
God gave you a map. Why would you need signs? Unless they're going to get rid of the map.
Oh.
The fun is just do that. Around, isn't it?
Why not?
Just go one direction.
Why not get rid of the map for World Showcase?
I suppose they could. No, no. But shall we head into World Showcase? I give you this bit of news, Craig, because it was all about Donald. We know how much Kieran loves Donald.
Hariba, Hariba, Hundre, Hundre, Hundre!
China?
Donald's new home is in Epcot, is now and now officially open. An old temple ruin backdrop stands to the side of the main temple as a permanent home for Donald meet and greets. Yeah.
It looks cool.
Taco Donald is in Mexico.
It looks really cool. It looks a bit like, you know, that where King Louis used to live in Jungle Book. It looks a bit like that, which is quite cool.
I think Donald needs more homes, but that's brilliant, isn't it?
It is. He's got a big Mexican hat on as well. You know, we photo take him with him, his big Mexican hat on.
It ties nicely to Three Caballeros, doesn't it?
Right, it's obviously all linked to that, yeah. Okay, let's move around a bit further and let's head over to Japan because they have a brand new exhibition. The exhibition is entitled Spirit Beasts, From Ancient Stories to Anime Stars. It features some of the mysterious creatures from traditional Japanese myths and artwork. And these creatures and these stories, and how they inspired the most popular modern-day characters from manga, comics and anime. This is what the sort of Disney blogs have said, Disney Park blog have said, that those creatures and their stories inspire some of the most popular modern-day characters of Japan's manga, comics and anime. Although there's no closing date that's been announced, it is expected that Pavilion will be there for at least the next 2 years. So don't rush out if you're a big anime fan. It is going to be there for the next couple of years. Another quick bit of news which sort of appeared just before we started to record this evening, and that is that Disney have officially announced that they are going to be taking reservations for Via Napoli as of the 6th of September for reservations starting the 6th of August for reservations starting the 10th of September. There is going to be a grand opening celebration on the 5th of August, and then the restaurant will be in soft opening walk-in phases from the 6th of August until the 10th of September. You will be able to use your dining credits and things, but it will just be a case of walk up and hope that there is space. Some interesting points that have come out. Originally, we thought there was going to be a table service and a counter service location. Turns out the restaurant is going to be table service only, no quick service, which is a real shame, bearing in mind Italy is one of the few countries that doesn't already have anything quick service. We're hoping this was going to sort of resolve that problem. The Disney dining plan is to be accepted. It's going to be 1 point per person per meal. There's going to be the wood-fired pizzas that are going to come in 3 sizes, individual, large with 8 slices, and the Mezzo Metro, which is a half meter, 12-slice pizza. There is going to be one... That sounds good, doesn't it? There's going to be one menu for both lunch and dinner, with the average check being around $23. And there will be several vegetarian options, including margarita pizzas, fusilli pasta, pesto, salad, minestrone, and a lot more. So there we go. From the 6th of August, you can start booking for the 10th of September. Do you know, I think I've still got a table service credit left for my trip. And I am very, very tempted to see if I can get a walk in here because it sounds good.
Pizza.
Yeah, and I'm not dinner yet, so I'm starving.
Ask for two and fold them into a burger. They might catch on and go, that's a great idea.
I'm not going to go to Lucilio with you, Ed. I'm just going to walk in there.
Okay, fine.
Because you're not paying for me.
I'm not paying for you anyway. Right, there's nothing for Hollywood Studios this time. So we're going to head ourselves over to Animal Kingdom for our last piece of American news. So, Juz, what do we got at Animal Kingdom?
This is awesome to awesome. Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park will be offering a new immersive experience like a small group of guests on a personalised guided treks through the never-before-explored areas of the reserve. Using the excursion, guests will have more time to spend observing the wildlife on the savannah, have a chance to learn about the individual animals and their behaviour. There's a lion. He sleeps all day.
Is that what we're getting?
Yeah. I lost myself then because I thought I dropped connection. Sorry.
No, you were still there.
No, I think it must have been Craig had stopped breathing or something.
Yeah.
I disappeared. Participants will also have the chance to explore undeveloped forest area of the reserve and then board a unique vehicle specially designed for the rest of the tour. Yeah, like a big van that you all sit in the back of. Walt Disney Imagineers are still working on the many details and prices, and reservations are not due to be released till later this year. I think this sounds absolutely brilliant and I'd love to do it.
It sounds a little bit like the stuff they do at Busch Gardens.
The Serengeti thingies did that. Really great.
Yes.
Apart from we had some mad New York woman who was with us who just kept screaming at everyone.
Okay. Different. It sounds awesome, though. I wonder, do you think this is going to be an expensive tour?
Don't care. Everyone will go on it. I think it's brilliant.
I'd definitely go on this. It sounds like something that would be really awesome. They do the Sunset Safari over at Animal Kingdom Lodge, don't they? So this is going to be...
Done that as well. That was amazing. That.
What do you think, Craig?
Yeah, brilliant. Let's do it. What are we talking about? Oh, new him. Tour later in the year.
Brilliant.
Babsy did drop off connection. Babsy wasn't really a man.
Disappeared off. Experience it would take. Go get some personalised guided rates. Everything we've all experienced. Oh, brilliant. That'd be really cool, wouldn't it? Go around the hammer and a bit.
So did you just fall asleep or something?
No, he disappeared off and he's literally just put up on Skype back. And I thought, right, what do you think, Craig? And he's obviously got no idea what we're talking about.
Can I point out that if you do go, the best thing on Skype is to say, just nipping off. And then yeah, go
rather
back.
Just disappearing.
So I was right when I thought that he'd, when I stopped because I thought he'd died.
Okay, I'll tell you what I had to do. I had to do something on my phone, which meant I had to go on to mute because otherwise you would get biddy-biddy-biddy-biddy on the phone for work. So I put myself on mute and then did the thing for phone and then put the phone back somewhere else and then came back and didn't realise what we were talking about because I'd taken my headphones off.
But why did you say that you're going somewhere?
Because it just done, my phone started beeping straight away and I knew I'd do something out for work.
Can I just
point out that... another domestic.
But I knew when he wasn't there and you were like laughing at me. I knew, Craig, that you weren't there. It was just like a sixth sense that I was worried.
Yeah, oh, thank you, Jazzy Bear.
We're like that.
It was just work.
That doesn't work on a microphone.
When you two have finished man-patting each other on the back.
We're bromancing.
We're sorting out our futures, aren't we, Jazzy?
Yeah, well, me, Craig.
I'll leave you to romance, and I'm going to jump on a plane and head over to Disneyland Paris because we've got some Disneyland Paris news for you. Starting off with Craig.
Hang on, can we check if Craig, are you there?
I'm here, yeah.
You're still in there.
I'm just going to... I'm a bit disappointed, actually, with Disney, because this is an idea I had 12 years ago, but Disneyland Paris now broadcasts the Disney Village radio station worldwide thanks to the wonders of the Tinternet. Orlando Sky Radio in partnership with La Squeak Radio. Now, an interesting idea. The music covers hits from the 70s, 80s and 90s, so it's probably going to be like Joe Le Taxi, just repeated, isn't it?
Don't just
and present day... With occasional Disney covers thrown in for good measure, the station does have adverts for some of the Disneyland Paris attractions. Who sees the point of this venture when you've got perfectly good La Squeak radio you could listen to?
Well, that's one of the reasons I put this piece of news in, because I listened to this the other day, and basically it's like Radio 1 for France. They just have like general, ordinary music on it. It's not even anything Disney-related, and it doesn't even play... your park music, you know, it's not like Disneyland Paris of Terror and said, what we're going to do is a radio station that's just going to play music from the parks, because that's exactly what La Squeak Radio does. And that's the reason that just set La Squeak Radio up, because it is a radio station designed purely for music for Disneyland Paris. And that's brilliant, because I sit and listen to that. I listen to Orlando Sky Radio because I want to listen to Disney music. I don't want to switch on a radio station and listen to music from Disneyland Paris that I can get at home. So I don't quite understand what the point in this is.
Imagine how great it would be, though, if Disney did do a radio station with their park sound. And
yeah, it'd be awesome.
Features and even going into the park live. They would do it so well. It'd be the ultimate station. They could repeat it every couple of hours loop and no one would care. I just think this is an opportunity they've missed that I would love to hear them perhaps go and let's go straight to Disneyland Park or ride and talk to someone in a queue before they go on or talk to one of the cast members. Cool.
They could do it worldwide, couldn't they? With all the different time zones. They could go from
and everyone get excited about it. And then they could, you know, they push drop. Things. They go, oh, by the way, if you come in next week, we're going to do this deal on for food. Or how about you phone up now and get your half price covers for your food here? It'd just be awesome. The amount of people who listen to things like this podcast and the other podcast on the radio peaks round about now when people are getting excited, ready to go away. Because, you know, they want as much information. Do you not find you crave information before you go? And I just think this is such an opportunity lost. Bad Disney.
I do think, yeah, there's a perfect opportunity to do something like that, but they just sort of put normal music on, which I found very, very strange. Right, staying in Disney Village, we are looking at the groundbreaking that's been going on. The John Montagu, the 11th Earl of Sandwich, was in Disney Village last week. He was there for the official stone laying ceremony for the very first Earl of Sandwich restaurant that will be opening in Europe. Now, both Montagu and Philippe Gass, who's the president of Disneyland Paris, were in attendance, and they were holding these two comic-style shovels. I don't quite understand what that was about. While Mickey Mouse and a cast member dressed in a medieval costume, who, bless him, didn't look very happy, looked on. And they had this press photographer there who just took some photos for Disney, and it looks like that the Earl of Sandwich is now well underway. I just hope it has the same quality as what it has in America.
I love the Earl of Sandwich. They've got a lot to live up to.
Yeah.
All it's going to sell is ham and cheese. It's in France.
Ham? What's an ham and cheese? What's an ham?
Ham and cheese. Starting on his paninis.
Ham. What's an ham?
Ham, innit? It comes from a pig, doesn't it?
Ham. You mean ham? Sorry.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I mean ham, yes.
Yeah. Not ham. No wonder the French hate you.
I believe it's the other way around, old boy.
Yeah, something like that. Right, Juz.
Super break time, super break time, super break time. Super 8, the UK short break specialist, has announced the launch of its brand new Disneyland Paris attraction breaks, which I'm chuffed about because I get NHS discount with them, offering a range of 2, 3, and 4 night packages with multi-day entrance path to both Disneyland and Walt Disney Studios Park. The Disneyland Paris partnership offers super break customers a choice of selected 3 and 4 star hotels located in and around Disneyland Paris, which
it's free.
It's huge. It's huge. Including the Magic Circus, Dream Castle, Radisson Blue Disney, Explorers Disney, Carrier Hotels, all the same that everyone else always offers. Speaking about the new addition to the Attraction Breaks program, John Harrison, program manager at Super Breaks, commented, "Over the past few years, our attractions break program has soared in its popularity as we have added the biggest UK theme parks such as Alton Towers and a plastic theme park we don't like to mention. The Disneyland Breaks Paris partnership is the start of an exciting expansion into Europe. The package will give our customers the combination of great prices and services they are already used to in the UK."
Anybody stayed at the Radisson Blue?
No.
It's because it's reasonably cheap. But I've always been a bit worried about how far out it is and how easy it is to get to the parks. But maybe I should.
Is that the huge one?
Yeah.
More
out towards the golf course, isn't it?
My mate did it. He said that the shuttles were fine, but they were very busy. It's just the one which is massive, isn't it? It's got loads of.
Yeah.
He said it was very good, but it was, the shuttle journey was long and it was always chocker. And to be honest, I even hate the pink buses, so I don't think I'll be able to cope with anything. I walk it to the other ones, so I hate people, so that's why I don't.
Yeah, right. That's why we talk over Skype, because if we saw him in real person, he'd kill us. Okay, thank you very much. So Super Breaker joining the club. I do hope, though, if Super Breaker joining, we've got Eurostar doing their packages and everybody else, that there might then be another person in, someone who's going to help bring the prices down a little bit. Because I don't know about you, I think that prices are beginning to get a little bit out of control for packages to Disneyland Paris.
Yeah. Well, do you know what? They had that great period of time when they were starting to reduce a few things, when the recession started to bite. And then they got a little bit cocky because they didn't lose attendance, if I remember correctly, when we first started talking about
this. Yes, right.
And now they've started to lose attendance, but they haven't lost the cockiness. I'm going to go back to the way it was, where they always used to do a deal. I mean, you've had some great deals with the train ticket, with the free admission and everything.
Go
back to the wheeling and dealing. Craig doesn't care. He'll pay full price every time.
No, I won't. But I think the thing with Disneyland Paris is that because you can basically pop over there for a weekend, you know, it doesn't really bother me going in January when it's freezing cold and it's relatively cheap. So, you know, I looked, it was about £300 for a weekend for four of us in the Sequoia Lodge without transport, which was £170 cheaper than last year with free dining, which wasn't free because it was £170 more. So if you find the time to go, then, you know, it's a bit of a hassle because then you've got to book your choo-choo yourself, but that's only £50 each return. So, yeah, you can get them, but, it's, you know, if I can get a £50 train in a £300 hotel, why can't, you know, short breaks or super breaks or, you know, break a town or whatever they're called, give it to me anyway and stick £20 on fare trouble? Save my hassle.
Thank you, Craig. There we go. That's the reason why he doesn't run the finances of major multi-million pound
companies. Oh, come on, he could probably do better. Look at Gold Trail.
Yeah, poor sausages.
Exactly.
Right, Craig, last bit of news for us. What have you got?
Okay, it seems that there are lots of smaller entertainment offerings in the park that will not be returning after this summer. The whole park is closing down and being moved to Madrid. Below is a list of what is staying and what is going.
Should I stay or should I go now?
Right. In Walt Disney Studios, what is going, never to return until somebody dies and they bring it back as a tribute. The Good Morning Studios.
Applause.
Good Morning Studios. Man. Toon Train. Jazzy, their mate, sit down. High School Musical's off.
No!
Yeah.
Jack Sparrow at the Blockbuster Cafe.
Oh, can I just interrupt?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But haven't they just spent all that time and effort making the restaurant into High School Musical?
half of it's High School Musical and half of it's Pirates of the Caribbean, yeah.
And then they scrap it out of the park.
Well, yeah. The live show, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, they're scrapping the live show, which is meant to support the... Otherwise, you're going to go, oh, it's a basketball place.
Yeah, change
it to NBA.
That's a very good point.
Sorry to interrupt.
No, that's right. That's their wonderful marketing department that doesn't exist. And then over in the park, in Disneyland Park, Winnie the Pooh and Friends stage show is off-ski, mm-hmm. along with Goofy's Summer Camp. But what's hanging around, you'll be pleased to hear that in the Disney Studios, Stitch and Friends at the Place to Stars is staying. And Jack Sparrow is returning and staying in Adventureland in the Disneyland Paris Park, as well as Magic Music Days and the African Tam Tams. So I think Jack's just relocating, Jazzy. He's just moving house.
Well, no, he always appeared in Adventureland, but he always also appeared in Blockbuster Cafe. And the guy who was in Blockbuster Cafe was brilliant. Was absolutely brilliant. And then...
Probably his Johnny Depp. He lives over there, doesn't he?
Yeah, that's right, yeah. The one I'm really annoyed about is Good Morning Studios. That was really great. It was sort of the train that came down. You had all of the characters in their dressing rooms and it stopped sort of just outside Stitch and the characters got off and you could go and meet all of the characters and say hello. And we did it in New Year and it was brilliant. And all the little kids, including Harry, went to see them. Absolutely loved it for the first sort of 20, 40 minutes we were in the park, just meeting the characters, queued up and met Pluto and that sort of stuff. We got some absolutely fantastic photos of them up on the stage and then they got rid of it.
Crazy. Crazy mixed up world.
It is a crazy mixed up world. I'm not going to sleep tonight. Interesting. Goofy's Summer Camp hasn't returned. That managed one summer.
They do try things and drop them really quickly. Stitch.
Just did either of you see the Winnie the Pooh and Friends stage show? The one that was indoor at the Fantasyland Festival stage?
No.
Nope.
I just always felt it felt a little bit me like the Village Hall were doing a panto. Because it's this really bizarre, tiny theatre with the smallest looking stage. And it just looks like the sort of stage you get in your local village hall. And I just never thought it worked properly. It's a shame we're also not bringing anything back at the moment to the outdoor stage. At the moment, that looks like that's just going to be a meet and greet location as well. So it's a shame that they're getting rid of all of these things and only keeping stuff that... Well, if we look, Jack Sparrow is one person. The African Tam Tams continue to perform, and they're going to continue to perform inside. And the Magic Music Days are just people they bring in anyway. So they really are cutting back on a lot of the live entertainment that's coming in.
Are they cutting back on staff? Is that why? Because we did discuss the cutback on staff at the beginning of the year. Then they moved a lot across to the other thing, and now it's just a little bit, But you should never leave that stage empty. You know, for what it takes, even if you just have a couple of people doing something on it, keep it going. It makes it a focal point.
Yeah, and you've got that Chaparral Theatre now in Frontierland that just seems to be only being used at Christmas time.
And that's an amazing theatre.
It is an amazing theatre. It's massive. And it needs to have something huge in there. You know, that theatre is almost big enough to have something like Finding Nemo the Musical in it. And they need to do something with it, really. If anything, you knock it down if you're not going to use it other than at Christmas time. Well, you know, what's the point in having something there that's only being used for 8 weeks of the year when you could knock it down and use it for a space for an attraction?
Is that not the perfect location for Woody's Roundup? It's American.
Yeah, something like that. That'd be fantastic. But just use it. I just don't use it anymore. It's a real shame because, you know, Tarzan was old, I admit. The Winter Wonderland show they've got in there, Mickey's Winter Wonderland, has been going for donkey's years now. That could really do with an update. So it's a shame that area is slowly getting used less and less. You know, you think about that corner now, you've got Pocahontas' play area, you've got the Cowboy Cookout, you've got Woody's Roundup, you've got the train station, you've got an empty theatre, so there's not much dragging people around that way anymore.
If you start taking stuff out, you end up with being, if you take all the bits out of it and all the trimmings around it, Disney, you end up looking like an Alton Towers.
It is, yeah. It is a little bit like that, that you're going to suddenly get... Because when I go to Alton Towers, I always end up walking through a bit and going, is this actually open? Do people know this bit exists? And it is a little bit like that when you go down that way because there's nothing really dragging people down there anymore, which is a real shame. So hopefully they'll sort that. Anyway, that's my rant over. That's our news over. Thank you once again, boys, for joining me.
Ooh, boys.
Boys, yeah, you boys today. And let's move on with the rest of the show. I just heard my own voice. That's really weird.
It is you doing the echo in.
World.
Anyway, thanks, boys.
Bye.
Woo. Bye.
Sorry, woohoo.
flexible, simple, value, secure, honest, and trusted. They are some of the words that people think of when they book their Orlando holiday. And they are exactly the same words that people associate with CompleteOrlando.co.uk. With staff available 7 days a week, there are no better people to use. Contact the Orlando experts on 0800-294-8844 or visit www.CompleteOrlando.co.uk.
Those of you who listen to this in the US are going to think we're really strange because we're about to talk about Toy Story 3. And when it came out in the US, we didn't really talk about it at all. And the reason we didn't talk about it at all is because it wasn't out in the UK yet. But on the 19th of July, Monday the 19th of July, Disney released Toy Story 3 in the UK. And we were lucky enough to be able to send our roving reporter, Craig Duncan, off to London to go and see a press screening of the film and also to take part in the press conference as well, which was a few days ago. So we are, all three of us now, I've seen Toy Story 3. So what we thought we'd do is a bit of a roundtable discussion about the movie, about what we thought of the movie. Unfortunately, it's not going to be spoiler free. So if you have not seen the film yet and you don't want to know anything about it, switch off now. Skip forward probably half an hour or so to the press conference, which you'll hear at the end of this show. But Craig, first off, tell us a little bit about the day you had out on Friday and what happened.
Okay, right. So, we got the invitation to go up to London, me being the nearest one, being a southerner. I took one for the team and went up there. And it was in a small screening room in Soho, which... is a place I haven't been to for a few years, Jazz, before you say anything. And
I went inside.
It was a very hello. Yeah, there's people standing outside with cravats and all sorts. A very small kind of side street you went down, but it was, you know, a beautiful kind of mini cinema in all respects. And there was lots of journos in there, and then me. And we sat in the bigger screening room that held probably about 45 people in the most comfortable kind of lazy boy velvet chairs. It was wonderful. They gave out the 3D glasses, which was, we'll talk about that in a minute. But, the film started with the night and day short, which I thought was clever. I kind of enjoyed that. There was lots of kind of journos in there with laptops open, taking notes as the kind of film went on, which was a little bit off-putting. We saw the 3D version of the film. Afterwards, we had a nice little lunch and a few little drinkies, and then we walked over to the Soho Hotel, where in kind of like a, I suppose like a blacked-out auditorium is all you can describe it. There are a couple of pictures of other people that went there. They put on Facebook. I didn't want to take any photographs. There was kind of a three-man panel. There was John Miller, the guy at Disney that was organising it, Lee Unkrich and Darla K. Anderson. And they sat behind a beautiful backdrop of Toy Story 3. And we had about a half an hour question and answer session led by John Miller from Disney, who started off with a couple of questions to both Darla and to Lee. Then there was a couple of journalists that he knew. And, you know, me kind of standing there, put my finger up and managed to kind of get a question in, which was, you know, a big moment for us. So we're very pleased with that. But it was really interesting, actually, to see how that these, you know, how Lee and Darla interacted with the audience. And actually, right at the very end, we all had to huddle together. And Lee got out a mini big baby that he carries around with him everywhere. And he takes pictures, which I think you can see on his Twitter feed, of big baby in front of all the journalists that he meets. So he took a photograph with us. With it all, so that was quite exciting, but a really, really interesting day. It was something obviously that I had never done before. I know, Adam, that you're kind of, you know, a bit more movie-fied than I am, but you know, for an Essex chump to kind of turn up at one of these things, it was a real thrill, actually. And I really kind of enjoyed my day and was buzzing about it quite a lot. And what was really interesting was not only going and seeing the film and seeing the press conference, but reading all of the press pack and all of the information that they gave you and that sort of stuff. You could really, you know, as a fan, which obviously I was going as a fan, not as, you know, somebody just reporting it. I was there as a true kind of Disney and Pixar enthusiast. To me, that was wonderful. I was reading every single word of these, you know, 60-page press packs. They were just so interesting to see how they came about the ideas. And they spoke about the story of how they went to a cabin and, you know, how they came up with the ideas and how the story developed. So that was, you know, that was brilliant. And I think that was lost on a lot of the journos because they were just there. It's a film, we'll write a review, we'll move on.
Yeah. And, you know, when we were given the opportunity to go to the press screening, I couldn't believe the fact that it was just before I finished school and there was no way I could go. And Craig went, and, you know, all the journos turned up with their laptops and Craig turned up with a large Coke and popcorn. Remember what you do?
We did.
Exactly. Do you write notes? What? But
there I tried was to get in the back row, but there were some people in there already.
Like the Guardian were there, weren't there, and some other different bits of people, you know. And it's great that we're now in a position that we're able to go to these sort of events and bring some really, really decent stuff for you guys. You know, one of the things we've always said we're wanting to do is to try and bring the best possible coverage of everything Disney that happens in this country. And we're now lucky in the position that we're beginning to be able to do that, which is fantastic. But we've all seen the film. Each of us have seen it in, Craig's seen it in 3D, me and Joseph have seen it in 2D. So what we're going to do now is to sort of really talk about what we think of the film personally. If you go over to the blog, we've got disneybrit.com/Disney blog. I've put a review on there, spoiler-free review of what I thought of the movie. So you can go and read that after this. But let's start off with that short then, Day and Night, or Night and Day as it is. What you sort of said it was clever. It was a really bizarre concept to start with, and I sort of started watching it thinking, this is really weird, what is going on here? And then it's quite clever, because actually, in a way, some of the stuff is quite grown up in the subject matter with some of the stuff they do with it. But you saw it in 3D, and I've heard that it's supposed to be really good in 3D. Is it better in 3D than it probably would be in 2D?
I was very, very disappointed with the whole 3D experience, to be honest with you, because to me, it's like you're watching the film wearing a very kind of light tinted sunglasses. You know, the whole idea of this is, you know, you've got the most stunning digital projections now that's crystal clear, high definition, all the rest of it. And I put a pair of sunglasses on, so it's taken a lot of the shine off. And there were no, I mean, it was kind of good because I wouldn't have liked to have a gimmicky 3D. But there were no kind of, you know, fingers coming out and touching you on the nose sort of 3D in Day and Night, or actually in Toy Story 3. There was none of that at all. It was just like things were like 2 inches off the screen. So it really wouldn't have made an ounce of difference to me, Adam, if it was in 2D or 3D. I really didn't think anything special about it at all. In fact, because I was wearing these glasses, I think it actually took stuff away. And during the film, the feature presentation, I actually took my glasses off for about half of it because I wanted to see the vibrant colours.
Right, okay. I quite like the intro. Harry sort of sat and watched it and pointed at stuff, but didn't really understand what it was. But yeah, it was quite nice. It was a little bit different because it looks traditional animation with the sort of computer generated behind it, which is quite a clever mix. Right, so what we really want to talk about is Toy Story 3, which is the film that is made with the short in front of it. And one of the things I always find is, you know, people get to the point where they make number one, they make film number two. I think Pirates of the Caribbean is actually a very good example of this. They made film one, which was really, really good. They made film two, which was okay. They made film three, which at that point you're thinking, okay, we're beginning to stretch the believability factor here. It's just getting, you're making stuff up for the sake of it now because you've made them so close together. And it was that whole, right, Toy Story 1 was amazing. Toy Story 2 was equally as good. Is Toy Story 3 going to be as good? And having read, I tried to find reviews of which had something negative to say about it. Every single review I found said how amazing it was. People were giving it 5 stars. I just couldn't find anything wrong with it whatsoever. And I had this whole thing going into the theatre that it was like, right, you've got to be good. Otherwise, we're going to come out of here thinking it's just been hyped up way too much. Did you have the same sort of feeling, you guys, when you saw it?
I loved all three of Pirates just as much.
Did you?
Yeah, sorry, mate.
I really thought number three began to lose it a little bit for me.
You're just crazy talk.
Sorry.
I think the problem has been with Toy Story 3 is, A, there's been a long gap, and you suddenly get very hyped up, and there has been a lot of hype, so you are naturally expecting something truly amazing. And Toy Story Mania has got all our appetites up over the last few years for another Toy Story. So in some ways, you could argue, you'd expect to have a bad review because you'd expect everyone put it up to fail. The flip side of that is it's Disney freaks who set it up to fail, not journalists like Craig Mett who are just looking at it as another Disney film.
Well, that's what I was going to sort of say, Craig. What was the feeling among all the journalists that were there on Friday with regards to the movie?
Well, I was talking to two in particular, actually, that were sitting kind of either side to me. We were talking about trilogies, and in their kind of film buffy view, kind of the two kind of best sets of trilogies there's been have been the original kind of Star Wars, Empire Strikes Back, Return of the Jedi, and the Back to the Future ones, 1, 2, and 3. To them, they were complete stories, and they worked very well. And they were trying... they didn't mention those. So I'll tell them when I see them over coffee. at the Cannes Film Festival, we're meeting up. For
yeah, all right.
You know, they were hoping that this was going to be in the same, you know, kind of the same pinnacle of decent trilogies. And at the end of it, you know, they were just, you know, everyone was saying how awesome it was, you know, and we can talk a bit about, you know, why it was so good because of the story and because of how it made you feel as an individual. But to them, you know, the story evolved. It wasn't just a third film. It had followed the timeline of us and as everybody else, you know, it'd been on the same kind of time as the universe. And it wasn't trying to add something else. It was looking at it from a different angle. It had grown up and it had matured. So they really, really liked it. In fact, it was very hard for anybody to find fault with it. They even like 3D, which, you know, I had to tell them they were idiots, but what do I know? I'm just a fan, not a film journo.
Well, let's explain the story a little bit to those people who haven't seen it yet. It's all about Andy, obviously, who's owned Woody all of these years, has grown up. He's now 17. He is moving to college. His mum comes in and tells him basically he's got to begin to clear stuff out, stuff that he's not taking to college with him. He's either going to put it in the attic or he's got to throw away. And he's got his old Western style trunk that still has all of the characters in it, one of his toys in there, and he's unsure as to what he's going to do. He eventually decides he's going to keep Woody and he's going to put the rest in the attic. He puts them all up inside a carrier bag and stuff happens, which means they eventually don't go in the attic and mum mistakes them for going out into the rubbish, basically. But it all begins this idea of Andy's older now, he's moving on, and it eventually results in that all of them are donated to a place called Sunnyside Day Center or Daycare, which is a nursery to you and me in the UK, of which all of these characters arrive at. And people, you know, Woody says to them, well, you don't want to go there, it's scary, it's horrible, et cetera, et cetera. And they begin to find out that actually maybe it's not quite as bad as they first thought it was, until they end up in the caterpillar class, which is basically the little kids who just terrorize everything and destroy everything, and the whole story sort of begins to evolve like that, and it becomes a bit of a prison break sort of style film. It's like this escaping from a prison sort of thing. But there's some great new characters in the film. Lotso Hugging Bear is one who's really known as Lotso. My favorite new character though has got to be Ken.
Yes.
Just
he was brilliant. Yeah.
Just genius. And also Michael Keaton playing Ken. And we were talking about this earlier, weren't we, Craig, about the bit where you've got Barbie and Ken saying I love you to each other.
Yeah, I love and you. You said first, I
love
you. See, it's different every time.
Yes, it's different every time. And they go through this whole thing. And the relationship that's built up between those two is fantastic and really does cater for the adults as well. You've got Lotso, who is the big pink stuffed cuddly bear, of which I understand they've sold all the toys. Is that right? They're sort of selling out.
It was funny. That was actually interesting because there was kind of talk after the conference, so it's not on the audio you hear, but they were saying about, you know, are you going to merchandise these? And there's been like a limited run of Lotso and of Big Baby because they didn't know how popular they would be. But, you know, they've flown off the shelves. Now, whether that's people have bought them because they look like a nice bear and haven't seen the film and then realise how evil he is.
He's misunderstood. He's not evil.
You think that until he got to the top of that ladder, and then you think, I could pull the stuffing out of you, pal, right now.
Yeah, it was like that. But, you know, actually, it's quite good that you talk about this whole idea of these emotions of these characters. And one of the things with the films is Toy Story 1 was very much a film about the toys that live in your bedroom and about a little adventure they go on. And there's not a huge amount of emotion in the first movie as much as there is in sort of the second one. And the second most poignant moment in the second movie is the song with Jessie when she loved me. And they go back that whole and stuff. Yes, it's bringing memories back already. And then suddenly in this third one, there's just this huge mix of emotions that come in throughout the entire movie. That feeling of tension, the emotion, the sadness that comes towards the end. But I was trying to explain this to someone earlier, that the sadness in the film isn't the sadness as in it's upsetting. It's the sadness as in the realisation of a moving on, that sort of thing, which is something that's very, very clever.
And also it's kind of us three are all slightly different ages, like, you know, it's like half decades between each of us. But you know, these things have happened to us, and known things have happened to us. So, you know, I still have, I mean, it doesn't sleep with me, but it's still in the house. The kids have got it. My teddy bear I had as I was a baby. You know, it's still sitting. In fact, Adam, it was in the bedroom you stayed in. You know, we still have these things, and, you know, Alex, Kieran still have their toys. And I could just imagine the pain I would feel, not that I play with it or look at it or do anything, but if that got thrown away.
You protest too much.
But if that got thrown away, you'd think, oh my God, I don't want that to go. You know, I don't ever want it to see it again, but that's part of me. And you could just see, you know, that's why I think that this is, and going through kind of the press packs, there's a story where they're talking about, you know, one of the guys had moved house and had thrown all of his wife's stuffed toys away because she'd put them in a garbage sack. And the argument was, why didn't you look in the garbage sack? And his argument was, why put them in a garbage sack? So, you know, and that's kind of, that bit is absolutely replayed in the film. And you can think, oh, I know exactly where this is heading.
This is what I'm curious about, and I was going to ask you about this, Adam, is the fact that I thought about it today, and thought, I thought exactly the same as you. I thought, this is about moving on. And it's not just about moving on of your toy. It's about several stages in your life you look back and you've had to move on over something.
Yeah.
You know, and you think there's a poignant split. And I think that it was a visual representation of whether it's a toy or something in your life, of that moving on process, you know, looking in your rearview mirror type thing. And I thought, well, actually, I don't think a kid would ever understand that. I think the kid would see on a slightly different level. As an adult would see the more tug of the heartstrings, oh my God, this is, I've had to go through this several times, whether it's, you know, animals or whatever. But the kid probably doesn't see it the same. I was wondering, did Harry see it the same, or did you just see it as he's left it behind?
Yeah, Harry saw, you know, the point where, there was a point with in the movie where Woody manages to escape from Sunnyside Daycare, and he manages to climb over the wall, and there's a little girl, Bonnie, picks him up and takes him home, almost rescues him from the situation. And there's that quite nice moment of Woody feeling, you know, I've escaped, I'm going back to somebody's home. I was like, oh, brilliant, you know, he's going to be happy again, et cetera, et cetera. Harry was just worried at the fact that Woody had left his hat behind. He was actually shouting at the screen, Woody, your hat, Woody. I was like, fine, it'll be fine. He'll get it back later. Don't worry. And Harry was just genuinely upset, not upset, but like worried that Woody had lost his hat and he wasn't going to get it back again. So it works on different levels and there's different things that people pick up. And that's one of the fantastic things about this movie, is that sometimes you go and see films where I think Shrek's a perfect example, where you watch the films and there is so much adult humour in them that they're almost made more for an older audience than they are for younger kids. Whereas Toy Story 3 hits every single age bracket spot on.
Do you think that, well, there's a repetition, and do you know, with Up, there was that thought, you know, that adult thought-provoking moment. Do you know when he turned over the page and says, and now your adventure begins?
Yeah.
The moment in Toy Story when that happened was almost, again, it was trying to apply an adult moving moment to it that they did incredibly well in a CGI film.
Yeah, completely. Mm. Completely. Pixar just are able to do this. They are so good. It's just the storytelling. They are so good at storytelling. And because they can do it so well, they can create the emotion from very, very little. If you look at actually the really emotional bit at the end, when Andy goes into Bonnie's garden and he starts to share all the toys with her and tell her about them all, and then starts to play with her. What he actually does there isn't anything massive, but the way they tell that story is just absolutely fantastic. And they do exactly the same with Up as well, when we see the whole life of Carl and Ellie. Oh, and then there's just that the moment.
Yeah, I was going to say, we saw Up twice over the weekend for some reason, and I still can't sit and watch the first 20 minutes.
Do you not find that the first 20 minutes, I don't find, you know, upsetting? It's the bit in the book where there is that follow-on. It's a case of don't live in the past, move on.
Yeah.
And this is your time now. And almost that playing in the garden, he was doing that, oh, look, I'm still a kid.
Yeah.
But then it's a case of, no, you're not. You have to move on and leave things behind. And you sit there and you go, oh, you know, that's different parts of my life. Or my kids who are, you know, Christian's nearly 18, he's going through that transition. He went for his first driving lesson today. And it's that transition that I start to think as well, you're getting older. Therefore, probably I'm getting older, but you're changing. And I think that's why it hit home with me, and that's why you need a box of Kleenex.
One reason to wear the 3D glasses, they can't see.
Well, can I just mention the 3D bit a sec?
Go on.
To me, the worst thing about 3D, if you're old enough like me, and you guys probably remember, do you remember Jaws 3D?
Yeah, dreadful.
Yes, when you got things stuck at you. Surely, listening to what you said before, the most perfect use of 3D is just to have things coming out the screen a couple of feet to give that true perception, like parallax scrolling. Yeah. So perhaps there wasn't things getting poked at you and sticks and stuff like that, but surely 3D shouldn't be that. It should be just giving you a sense of depth.
Yeah, I think you're right. And one other thing we've got to think about here is 3D really has begun to take off in the past 2 years, maybe. Toy Story 3 will have been in development maybe 4, possibly 5 years.
It's so lazy and slow at Disney.
Way, way before 3D was really becoming big. And some of these films, they're going, oh, we can make a bit more money from 3D, so let's put 3D in. Interestingly, with the bookings, the advance bookings that have been taken so far, it seems that a lot of the 2D showings are selling out, and very few of the 3D showings are beginning to sell out. Which is, thank you for that. 8:15 from Manchester. Interestingly, that they don't seem to be selling out. So what does that
mean? They're charging more for it, and I think the experience is worsened for it. So,
yeah,
you know, you're paying more and getting less. So, you know, not a rocket scientist will tell you that's not a good deal.
But I also know that Harry wouldn't have sat through that with a pair of 3D glasses on. There's no way in a million years that would have happened. So we went for 2D anyway. Let's talk about the beginning of the film, because one of my favourite openings of any Disney movie is Bolt. The way that they have that entire chase sequence that happens right at the beginning and all that sort of stuff. And suddenly, we've got the same sort of thing happening in Toy Story 3. The opening to Toy Story 3 is absolutely brilliant. You've got the evil Dr. Porkchop back, and you've got pretty much every single character. It's just, I love the bit when they were saying, what are you going to do? Are you going to save yourself or save the orphans? And it cuts across to all the trolls hanging out the train window. made me laugh out loud. But it's just a fantastic opening to the story again. So creative, so imaginative.
I agree. I think Bolt was awesome. And I think what it does, it just chucks you straight into the action straight away, doesn't it?
It does. It's literally, you see the opening credits and it's in. It's that quick. There's no build-up to it. You know, luckily we're in the third film. We know all the characters. It just sort of happens. And, you know, even though I know every single character that's in that story, at the point when that train went off the bridge, I went to myself, how's he going to get out of this? What's he going to do? Completely forgotten Buzz Lightyear hadn't appeared yet, and then obviously picked it up and brought it out. But it still, to me, was like, there was still that moment of suspense and still that part of it, and that humour that's in there as well. Interesting choice to leave out Bo Peep.
Boring.
Yeah, she wasn't a great character. She didn't really add a lot to it. But it was straight away we had that emotion of, oh, some of the characters have left us, et cetera, and Bo Peep, and we had that moment, sort of that separation thing with Woody.
Yeah, it was funny though, because I hadn't read, I don't know if you had, Jazz, or you hadn't before, but I tried not to read anything about the film apart from the press pack, which didn't give any story away, because I wanted, you know, everyone had said it was sad and so on. And so I'm watching the opening scene and thinking, well, that train's gone over. Well, was that it? Are they all kind of died and it's all him recovering from all of his toys being, you know, I hadn't even thought.
But, do you know what, looking back at that though, do you not think that, you know, a psychology tutor would have a field day with this, really, for his class. Is that not showing that while things have changed, toys are still toys? They have not changed, aged, or anything. They're still just them.
Yeah.
I forgot what I was going to say. It's completely gone from my mind. Okay, let's go to the emotional bit. Let's talk about sort of the emotion within the film and also some of the scary moments in the film. The films are you in this country, and am I the only one who found Big Baby really creepy?
Yes.
Just me?
No, I think he was. I think the bit on the swings was, you know, when he turns his head, you know, proper 180, is pretty evil. And because of the size of him, he's quite dominant. But, you know, he shows a better side near the end than Cuddly Lotso. So, you know, maybe that's going to show don't judge a book by its cover sort of thing.
But saying that, did we not have some really creepy toys in Toy Story 1?
We do, yes, we do. But it's just this plastic baby that's just walking around very slowly, almost like, you know how do you know how in films you get the sort of thick bouncer type bodyguard? It was almost like the baby was that, and it did creep me out a little bit, I've got to admit. But I just, one of the things that this whole scary atmosphere, the way they created this daycare center, became, well, the first of the name, Sunnyside Daycare, sounds like a nursery, but it also, do you not think, sounds like a retirement home?
I thought retirement home when I first heard the name.
Yeah, retirement home for toys, though, isn't it? That's exactly what it is. And I thought that was genius, the choice of name. But also the way they use the setting to turn it into a prison. So at night, when everybody goes, they have the upstairs of the vending machine that becomes like the cool place to go for the boys. And then the rest of the place is just where they have people patrolling. They have the vehicles patrolling the corridors, and they have people on the climbing frames outside with the torches. And just how they use that whole space was absolutely brilliant. Right, come on. I want you to be truthful. Who cried at the end?
Yes.
My left eye had a tear. In fact, it started when they were going towards the incinerator. That's kind of when oh no, what's going to happen? And then, you know, when you see at the end, and you know, and he does the line with the partner, you think, oh no. And yeah, I did have a hay fever.
Did you have a tear?
Yeah, without a shadow of a doubt. And I think it's because I think you just, that one second, you relate to everything in your life you have let go of, you know, whether it is, you know, you've had a pet and it's died, just like, and all those, and the kids, etc. You think there's so many points in life that you don't really think about that there's a pivot, where there is a move on, and I think you have to relate to that. And they just did the job so well. I sat there and thought, not going to be fazed by this. And then they did that, I went, oh, bugger.
I was exactly the same. I was fine until Andy went into Bonnie's garden, and when he opened the box and he started showing all the toys, and that was it. I'd lost it. I just started crying. I was like, Harry, just watch the screen. Don't look at that.
Do not pretend like, oh, Harry,
I really was. I was surrounded by all these people. I'm just sort of like, I just wiped the tears of my shirt there, just with my collar. Nobody noticed. I looked fine. Come on, Harry, get out of the theatre for anyone sees it. It really did hit me, and nothing ever gets to me usually. I can watch the beginning of Up, and I do feel that emotion, but it doesn't make me cry. But that ending really, really got to me this morning. And I think it's partly because I had Harry with me, and it was that whole thing that Harry's in the situation where he has his Buzz and his Woodies, and he has his Thomas trains, and they are the most special thing to him in the world. And it's that whole thing that those things that are special to him, one day he's going to have to give them away and pass them on. But yeah, that did hit me big time.
And they filmed it so well as well, doing it from kind of Bonnie's perspective, looking up at him.
Yeah.
Isn't that funny? Because you say that, they go, they filmed it so well, but this is where we lose the sense that this is CGI. It just shows they've taken CGI to that next level, that you can sit there and go, they got the camera angle so perfect with it all. And then Pixar is so different from any other CGI maker. You never think like that with Pixar. You end up thinking it's a film.
And I think that is a testament to Leon Kridge and his direction. The way he created that movie was absolutely, it was stunning. Some of the stuff in that was more stunning than Up, and I thought Up was one of the most beautifully made films. Just the detail in it and the way they did a lot of that stuff was amazing. Does anybody have anything bad to say about Toy Story 3? Because I've got a couple of things that are really, really nitpicky, and they seriously are nitpicky, and that's all I to be fine.
Well, apart from the 3D, takes away from it. No, I haven't actually. I think. I would have liked to have seen a bit more of kind of Dolly's Mr. Prickly Pants and those sorts of toys.
They were in a lot, weren't they?
Daisy stuff. I would have seen a bit more of that. But no, I don't think I have actually. It's one of those films I'm actually very eager to go and see it again. The idea was I was going to see it on Friday, and then when next week I'm in Florida and I'm working, Debs is going to take the kids to go and see it. But actually, I think we'll go in the afternoon and I'll go and watch it again.
Yay.
Great. Jos, anything that you can find wrong with it?
No, it did its job for me. I went in there and it was very thoughtful. I mean, there's a lot of movies you can go and you leave your brain at the door and you watch it and it's enjoyable. Yeah. But no, I think that is, you know, and I spoke to Trace about this, it's a film that I think you could take to a university and give to a lecturer in psychology or movie making.
Oh, yeah.
And they can make a whole course about it because there's so many different layers. It's like an onion or a cake.
Many layers.
And I think Craig will probably go and see it and see things that he didn't see in it again. And this is probably what, you know, this to me is a film that without a shadow of doubt, I'm going to buy on DVD when it comes out because it's a keepsake for me. I know you're going to find nitpicking because you're just a Disney freak, but for me, it's perfect.
The only nitpicky thing I can really find wrong with it is one, it was a little bit scary for you. That was my one thing. My only thing is, it was the length of it. For me personally, it's fine, but bearing in mind that, I mean, this is a whole family, I thought it was a little bit long for younger kids. But that is genuinely the only thing I can find wrong with it. There is nothing else. And I sort of sat there and I was coming out and I've been racking my brain all afternoon about there must be something somewhere I can find that's wrong with this film. I just genuinely can't find anything. And it's, I've never been in this situation before where I just can't find anything wrong with a movie. And I think that is just a testament to the whole thing. And we were talking about trilogies, and you were talking about trilogies earlier, Craig. And I honestly think this is possibly the best trilogy ever made.
Yeah, that's why I'm going to buy the box set, because I haven't got the other two on DVD.
Oh, so they'll do a box set, won't they? I keep waiting for that, then.
Yeah, but I can't... You know, if you think about it, Star Wars trilogy, I think this beats the Star Wars trilogy.
Star Wars trilogy is boring, that's why.
I think it beats the Back to the Future trilogy. I think it beats Lord of the Rings trilogy. I think it even beats the Godfather trilogy. I honestly believe this is the best trilogy ever made. And if Toy Story wasn't as groundbreaking as it was, I would say this would be the best film I'd ever seen in my life.
Ooh.
I honestly think that much of it.
I am going to stand next to you and say, when you said that, I'm going to say this is the best trilogy ever done.
Cool.
I would just like to add very quickly, whilst we're recording this, a good friend of the show, Hayden, I've just checked his Facebook. He's just put a picture up of him posing with Lee Unkrich and Darla Anderson at the Disney store. So kudos to you.
They were there today, weren't they?
Well done.
Good lad. Does anybody else got anything else they want to say about the film?
Yeah, go and watch it now.
Yeah, just go and see it. You know, there's nothing else really I can say other than you just have to go and see this film. It's just amazing. It really is. I can't think of anything else to say about it other than it is truly an amazing film.
And take a pin with you and stick it in your finger when the teary gets that way. Take your mind off the sadness.
Take tissues.
You, to me, next time what I should do, you should sit in the cinema and just look around when that happens.
Yeah.
And I bet everyone be doing exactly the same thing. Oh, yeah, don't worry. Or talking to the kids. Are you okay there, son?
Well, I don't think we can speak any more highly of the film than we have done today. Just go and see it. I'm going to go see it again, without a shadow of a doubt. I'm going to take Zoe to see it because she didn't come with us. And
that's good of you, mate.
I know. I took Harry on his first trip to the cinema while Zoe was at work. Brilliant. But yeah, that's it. Go and see it.
Woohoo!
You've got a friend in me. You've got a friend in me. When the road looks rough ahead in your mind. And miles from your nice warm bed, you just remember what your past said.
Attraction Tickets Direct is the UK's number one ticket provider for Disney, Universal, and the worlds of Discovery Parks. They offer unbeatable prices and expert advice on all the major tickets and attractions in Orlando, California, and Paris. The service Attraction Tickets Direct provides is second to none. Lines are open 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. 7 days a week. Customers receive real tickets, not vouchers, within 7 days. And there are no hidden extras, such as credit card fees or postage surcharges. Now that's what you call great service. Log on to www.attractionticketsdirect.com or call free on 0800-975-0002.
As we mentioned earlier on in the show, we said that Craig had had the opportunity to go over to the press conference and the press screening for Toy Story 3. And while he was there, he was able to attend a press conference that had Lee Unkrich and Darla K. Anderson. Lee Unkrich, the director of Toy Story 3, and Darla K. Anderson, who was the producer of Toy Story 3. And he went to the press conference to get some more information, to try and ask some questions, and at the same time also recorded the audio of that press conference as well. So what we're going to bring to you now is the audio that came from that exact press conference. Here it is.
Now all my friends are gone, and I'm doing best I can to carry on.
I had power. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. First of all, to the big farewell for Tash, who is leaving Disney today for her latest and most exciting production, and we wish her well in that. But the real business of the day, obviously, is the press conference for Toy Story 3 in 3D. And today we're joined by the producer, even, of the film, Darla K. Anderson, and the director of the film, Lee Unkrich. I will ask our guests a question each, and then take as many questions from yourselves in the time that permits. Darla, if I can start with you. You know all about all of this high-tech stuff. I don't, because I'm not gifted.
What... That's not what I've heard.
Thank you, that's most kind but untrue. What is it that 3D brings to the world of animation? Can you explain that to us in language that even I would understand?
I think 3D is just a really fun way to watch our film. We at Pixar, and particularly in Toy Story 3, use a lighter touch with our 3D. We don't want it to really distance the audience emotionally in any way, shape, or form. Instead, we want to draw the audience in. So in that way, we see it more as a window into the world, like a diorama, because the story and the emotion is just so important to us. Do you want me to go into more detail than that?
What I wanted was a little of the detail that Pixar are famed for your painstaking attitude towards every element of the making of the movie. Does the additional element of 3D mean that it takes a little longer then to create the magic, or is it hand in glove with what you're doing already?
Well, it takes a little bit longer to produce it, but we have this wonderful team led by passionate 3D lovers who worked with Lee to help... Can we not hear me?
Is there a mobile phone on? Perhaps.
Not me.
Off.
Lee?
No, we always have this problem here. It's the venue. Yeah. There we go.
I'll turn it off.
It's okay. Thank you very much. You're going to go to the bad side after this, Lee.
You'll be banished from London.
That's unlikely to happen. Sorry, Darla.
Okay, there we go.
So the process was produced parallel with us, with a small but dedicated and passionate team of folks who love 3D. And so it took a tiny bit longer, but it was done in concert with our film.
Thank you. Lee, first of all, if you can move the microphone just a wee bit closer to your good self so you don't have to project too vigorously.
Okay.
If I'm right...
It is the afternoon, after all.
Your Pixar career began with Toy Story when you were a film editor. So your life has been wrapped around the wonder of creating these three very special movies. Now, I wonder if you could just tell us what it means to you to have been part of the creation of something that's now part of movie history and is going to go on to each generation as the kids grow up with the magic of the Toy Story trilogy.
Well, you know, I have been very lucky to have been a part of all three of the Toy Story films, and... I remember back to when we were making the first Toy Story film, we knew that we were making something special that was unlike anything the world had ever seen up to that point. But we certainly didn't think we were making anything that was going to become a part of pop culture. We just were hoping we could make a halfway decent movie that people would want to see, and that we would maybe be lucky enough to get to make another movie after that one. And that was as grand as our plans were at the time. But, of course, Toy Story did end up going on to be a huge hit, and people loved it. And then, you know, a few years later, we made Toy Story 2, which, you know, against all odds, did well and was well-received critically. You know, a lot of years went by, of course, before Toy Story 3. And when John Lasseter asked me to direct the film, I was very excited, but I was also completely freaked out at the idea of having to take the helm of, you know, a story that was so beloved to so many people all over the world. I certainly didn't want to be seen as the person responsible for screwing it up in any way.
I take it that a big component of the secret of making Toy Story 3 as good as it obviously is has been to spend an inordinate amount of time working on the script before you did anything else. Was that the case?
Yeah, and that's the case on all of our films. We started this film by going away for 2 days to a cabin, me and Darla and John Lasseter, Andrew Stanton, and a few others, and we spent 2 days just hashing out the beginnings of what became Toy Story 3. We then spent the next 2.5 years working with Michael Arndt, the screenwriter, and all of my story crew to kind of, you know, flesh out all the details of the story. But that's pretty typical for all of our films, is that we spend several years really just working away on the story and trying every possible angle to end up at the best way of telling the story.
Darla, just before we start taking questions, what, at that meeting in the cabin, what was the moment that you, of your contribution, that you were most proud and still are most proud of, the thing that you said, what about this?
You know, this is such a collaborative process. I was just proud to be there, to be honest with you. All of us have been friends and colleagues for so long. It's so much... I mean, I know it's such a privilege to be a part of this process. And the whole second day, it was a two-day offsite. And the first day, we didn't really come up with much. And the second day, we started landing on some of the key elements that are existing in the film today. And I was really proud and happy to be both a part of the conversation and a part of the conception of Toy Story 3.
Thank you.
We often don't remember who came up with what ideas. In fact, I recently went back and looked at the notes from that first meeting just to remind myself what the conversation was. And I was surprised because I had completely forgotten most of it. We just end up kind of collectively taking credit for everything.
And one idea feeds into another.
Exactly.
Anwar?
Lee, how easy is it to cast a villainous character in a film such as this, or even depict some of the characters in ways which, in the days of the first Toy Story, might have made toy manufacturers who created the toys raise an eyebrow?
I don't know if they would have back then. I mean, we had some dark elements and some kind of spooky characters in the original Toy Story, and the toy companies were still happy to make the toys. You know, there's you need a full range of characters in any movie, and you know, you need characters whose interests are antithetical to the main characters, and in this case, Lotso was just that. And we had a lot of fun coming up with a character who's seemingly very, very trustworthy, and then of course has another side to him. You know, he's talked about in the press a lot, which disappoints me because it kind of ruins the twist, I think, for people. But I know that all of the early audiences who saw the film without knowing what was going to happen were thrilled because they had no idea that, you know, he was going to turn that corner.
But in terms of turning corners, in terms of Ken, the sort of postmodern ironic version of Ken presumably might increase sales.
Well, I hope so. I mean, Ken, you know, here's the funny thing about Ken. You know, we approached Mattel and we pitched them our whole conceit of Ken and how, you know, what we wanted to do with him and how we were going to make fun of him. And they were completely on board. They were happy to have him be in the film, and they trusted us to do right by him. But because everything was on the record, we had a lot of conversations with Mattel and met with their designers, met with their historians. And we found out that one of the funny things about Ken is that for years, Mattel tried to find a special feature for Ken to try to boost sales, right? Because for the longest time, he was priced at like $4.99, and they wanted to give him some special feature to price him above $4.99. And they finally realized that the fact that he was $4.99 was his special feature. And to us, that was just perfect because it just fed into what we were already thinking about Ken, which is that he's a really insecure guy, right? He's a guy who's a girl's toy. He's only played with by little girls. He's ostensibly an accessory for Barbie, right? He's no more important than shoes or a purse or a handbag. And we just figured that he would be a completely insecure wreck and overcompensating in many ways. And that's where his character kind of came from.
Continuing with the dark side, who had the brilliant notion of creating Big Baby? I think it's the scariest character in the whole film, particularly that moment on the swing when the baby's head turns. I mean, it's like something out of Silence of the Lambs or Halloween.
Well, we did a lot of research into daycares, and everywhere that we went, we would see lots of these baby dolls. There would often be cribs full of 5, 10 naked baby dolls, just with their cloth bodies and covered with pen marks, and they were just a hallmark of daycare. So we wanted to stay true to that. But of course, we were making a Prison Break film, and we needed to have some baddies in the place, and that to me seemed like a logical thing to do. But the thing I love about Big Baby personally is that, yes, he is scary at times because I filmed him in a scary way, but he's an innocent. I think he's a very tragic character in the film, and I love that we can have a moment like that on the swing, which is frightening in a fun way, but just moments later you feel such deep empathy for the character.
Thank you. Bruce?
Lee, I mean, you have new characters who work wonderfully well. How difficult is it casting them? I mean, how much time do you spend kind of working out who would be perfect for the roles?
Well, we spend a lot of time.
Years.
Because you just want to find the perfect person. We have a guy we work with at Pixar, Kevin Rear, who's kind of our casting director. And for a character like Lotso, say, it was very important to me to find a find an actor who could play comedy and could be very trustworthy and warm, but who could also carry the darker material. And that was a very tricky thing because I didn't want to tip our hand at all. So I looked at some actors who I knew could do the intense stuff that Lotso needed to do, but I didn't think anybody would buy them as a warm, grandfatherly kind of guy. So that was actually the most difficult character in the film to cast. And it just took time until Ned Beatty's name finally ended up on a list. And the moment I saw it, I thought that was perfect because he's done a lot of comedy in his career. He is this kind of big, warm, genial kind of guy. But he's done some intense stuff in his career as well. I mean, he's nominated for an Academy Award for Network, and it's a very intense character that he plays in that film. So he came on board and ended up, I think, being the perfect person to play the character.
On casting, I think it's most significant, and Dala, you might want to run with this, that Pixar never ever go for stunt casting. We don't suddenly see a pop star doing a voice because it'll bring in that audience.
Yeah, you know, yeah, we really rarely do that. It's so important to us. You know, we're geeks and purists, and so it's so important to us that whatever we do and whoever we cast supports the storyline, and their voices have to be so memorable and so full of color and imbue a soul into the character.
Yeah, we've never. I think there's only one case where we've actually put the actors' names on the poster, and that was for Toy Story 2.
Yeah,
Tom Hanks and Tim Allen. But otherwise, we've never done that, and it, you know, we've never used the actors as being part of our marketing campaign.
And when we cast Tom Hanks and Tim Allen in Toy Story, they weren't the big stars in the beginning that they were at the end of Toy Story, the end of 4 years.
Right.
So that was interesting.
You gave them a leg up.
Yeah.
Siobhan.
The American Psycho author Bret Easton Ellis was talking about seeing Toy Story 3 and comparing tear stains with horror director Eli Roth afterwards.
I saw that.
Yeah, do you take a sort of wicked sense of satisfaction out of making such grown men cry?
Satisfaction. I'm proud that people find the movie affecting. And you know, we all find it very interesting that there's been so much talk about men crying in this film. We certainly never set out to make men cry. That wasn't a goal of making the film. But we do find it very, very interesting that so many people are affected by it. And we've spent a lot of time thinking about exactly why that's been happening.
It is kind of interesting that you have, you know, you tackle issues like extinction, abandonment, aging in Pixar movies, which, you know, many other sort of movies of the genre wouldn't go near.
Right. Well, and again, we're not... A lot of those themes kind of emerge as we're making the films. We didn't start out with a laundry list of things that we wanted to explore in the film. They came about organically. But once they did start to emerge and we realized that the film was about those things in many ways, then, you know, we would continue the writing to kind of support them. But at the end of the day, we also want to make a very funny movie. So part of the game is to find a balance between the kind of more meaningful moments in the film, but also make sure that it's really funny and entertaining on top of that.
Young man in the front row.
Can I ask, how easy was it to get all the original voice cast back together? It was after 11 years away.
Well, you got everyone back together. So.
Yeah, they were thrilled to come back. They couldn't have been more excited, and so it was quite easy, actually. And it really, each one of the original voice cast now is an extended part of our family.
Yeah.
They feel like our best friends, so we're in contact with them all the time, and so it was a mere phone call to schedule the meeting.
Everybody came back, with the exception of Jim Varney, who unfortunately passed away after Toy Story 2. He played Slinky Dog. But we spent a long time trying to find a suitable replacement for him, and we found this guy, Blake Clark, who's a character actor who, as it turned out, was friends with Jim and knew him. And so he took it upon himself to make sure he did right by the role. And we always felt like we were channeling Jim a bit every time we did a recording session. And when we were all done, when I showed the finished film to many of the actors, I told Blake that I thought Jim would be proud, and he unexpectedly broke down sobbing at that moment, because I think it was so important to him to get this right, and he felt like it was just a big deal to him that he'd been given the responsibility of stepping up and being a part of this big film, and which was part of kind of this big history of the Toy Story films. And I think he was very relieved to see that he'd done right by the part.
Sure, there was a question from a young lady from a blind side. No? No, Kim?
This leads on a little bit from what you were just saying, Lee. Disney as a company has strong traditional values, and I wondered how prevalent these are in your mind when you're developing a project. Do you have like a checklist of things to include?
No, we really don't. I mean, we really try to stay true to the story we're trying to tell. And I mean, in the case of the toys, there is a natural tension. Then I think where a lot of these universal themes are born from is a toy is meant to be played with and be loyal to their owner. In our minds, it's the purpose of a toy. And there's the natural tension of the child will eventually grow up. And so those very universal and very human themes came out of just the truth of the story we're trying to tell.
Right. I mean, there are some ideas that kind of were there from the get-go with the first Toy Story that we knew were a part of the series. I mean, they've always been in great part about free, unbridled play, you know, the innocence of childhood and the importance of imaginative play. And we've just continued to embrace that through the three films. I mean, that's something that we've always been aware of, that the films are about in part.
The young lady over on the far side.
The ending?
Yeah.
The second day of working out the story, to be honest. This two-day offsite that Darla mentioned where we went away and kind of cooked up the idea for the movie, we emerged from that with a few fundamental things. We knew that Andy was going to be grown up and heading to college. We knew that the toys were going to end up at daycare and that the daycare was going to turn out to be not such a nice place. And it was going to become like a prison break kind of a movie. And we knew the ending. We didn't know the specifics of exactly what was going to be said or how, you know, the machinations that would lead to that ending. But we knew that at the end of the film, Andy was going to pass on his toys. And it was a good thing to have that ending because endings are often the hardest thing to come up with in a film. You know, we've all seen perfectly enjoyable films that had disappointing endings. And we were lucky that we had that ending. And so a lot of our work had to do with figuring out the best way to navigate our way towards that ending.
The gentleman in the patriotic T-shirt.
Hello. It's been reported that Tom Hanks and Tim Allen were really pushing to do Toy Story 3. Is this kind of an unusual case to have the actors so determined to do this before the studio has really decided on its direction? And is that a testament to kind of what's gone before with Toy Story and its, I suppose, branding?
Well, I don't know that they were pushing so hard to get it made. I know that Tim especially was very interested in being in a Toy Story 3. He would call us regularly over the years wanting to know when it was going to happen, just because he loves playing Buzz Lightyear. And when we would bump into Tom, you know, he would ask about it as well. But there was never any kind of organized effort on their part to get a movie made. they were just happy when we finally called them and said that it was a go.
Lee, what's with this sort of big kid attitude that permeates the workforce at Pixar? I believe that the latest thing is that during the making of Toy Story 3, someone came up with the notion that all you gentlemen, I believe some ladies too, should shave their heads.
Yes.
And have a contest to see whose head could be shaved the most shiny and who could then start to grow the biggest beard. I don't think the ladies have taken of that element of the competition.
No, but they shaved their heads.
Yes, but they did shave. What was this all about?
I don't know. You know, so much of the fun at Pixar comes down from John Lasseter. I mean, he's definitely set the tone at the company, and he surrounded himself in the early days with people that were big kids like him. And that you know, that spirit of fun has just never gone away, even though we've gotten a lot bigger and Disney owns us now. Pixar's still, in many ways, very much the same kind of place. You know, the animators especially, it's like there's a very frat house mentality down there. It's like anything goes, and there's a lot of craziness and debauchery at times. And
of a nice kind.
And all kinds. And in that case, we had just finished up. It was all done, and the spotlight was kind of swinging onto us. We were the next film up at bat. And my supervising animators, Bobby Podesta and Mike Venturini, decided that we needed to have a clean start. We needed to kind of clean the deck and say, okay, it's now us. We're making the next film. And so they thought, let's just shave our heads and beards and then see who could go the longest without getting a haircut or shaving their beard. So before that day, I actually had kind of long, shaggy hair. And I had never worn a beard in my life, and now look at me. So that ended up having a big influence on me.
It was a very solidifying moment, though, on the film.
Yeah, well, we knew it would build morale, yeah. Right? Everyone would get excited about it, especially if I did it. You know, if I would like
especially
join them down there.
Especially because you had long, gorgeous locks.
I tried to get her to do it, and you thought about it for about half a second.
I did, yeah. than I did.
Didn't happen.
So is there a group picture in the existence of all you Pixar baldies?
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
That's great.
There's a great picture of me with a with the sun hitting the back of my head, and it looks exactly like the opening of 2001 A Space Odyssey. The sun kind of breaking over my top of my head.
What I love about it is a contest, but mm-hmm. with no apparent rules of winning it in any way. It's really about morale.
Anwar.
Well, I was going to ask about that, so extending on that point, really, as the founding members of the Pixar family do get older and their families grow up and move on, how do you retain that sort of boyish or youthful enthusiasm and innocence, I suppose, that's reflected in the films you've made?
Well, you know, I mean, we act very immaturely in a lot of ways. When we get together, I mean, we're still, it's, you know, we were in our 20s, a lot of us, when we made Toy Story, and we, when we get back together, we still kid very much in the same way, and I suppose our children keep us young in a lot of ways.
But in terms of the new blood coming into the company, they have to fit in and then, I suppose, move things on in their own way.
There's a lot of really great new talent that's moved into the company. We had two or three really talented young folks on our story team that really infused a lot of great new ideas and life into the team and made us feel a bit old because the first time they saw Toy Story, which inspired them to get in the industry, they were 8 years old.
There's a lot of that, actually. Yeah. It makes us feel old.
Yeah, we think. But the other thing is we think we're young until that happens. We actually, you know, time is hasn't. We've been at the same company for over 17 years. We're still best friends with each other. So you don't realize how much time has passed until we have these new young talent come in and tell us that they were quite young when they saw our first film.
Kim?
Everything, presumably, is painstakingly put together, and I just wondered, is there much footage that gets made that doesn't get used? And, you know, do animators muck around a bit when you've got some X-rated stuff floating around?
Well,
yes, let me show you where to find it.
You know, animators have fun here and there. There's been some, you know, some funny gag moments that have surfaced over the years. You know, the animation is so expensive and time-consuming. You know, animators will spend weeks on just a few seconds of animation. So we try to really figure out what needs to be in the film and be very sure about it before we begin animation. Invariably, on every film, there are some moments or parts of scenes that turn out, you know, turns out a scene is just too long, and in the context of the whole film, it needs to be shortened. So we've lost stuff like that over the years. We're very lucky that on Toy Story 3, I don't think we cut anything. I mean, there were frames trimmed to tighten up the movie, but by and large, what we set out to animate is what ended up in the film.
I mean, really, it has to be the first film that's happened.
It's probably a bit like asking a parent to name a favorite child. If I ask each of you your favorite character in the film,
it is exactly like that.
Yeah, but do it anyway. Come on, Lee, you must have someone. You have a real soft spot.
Well, yeah, come on, name your favorite.
I do, but I do. I mean, it's. I don't say. I would never say I like this character more than any other character in the film.
That's why I said soft spot.
But I do have a soft spot for Big Baby. I mean, you asked who came up with Big Baby, yeah. And he was kind of, that was kind of my creation. I love that he's kind of a spooky character, but also a very tragic character. And I always thought of him like Lenny in A Mice and Men. Yeah. And so. I'll choose Big Baby.
Right, Darla, you can't opt out. You've got to see your soft spot character.
If it's a soft spot, I was going to say Mr. Pricklepants, because he's always been brilliant from the moment he hit the screen, and Lee's to do the scratch for it, and so I actually had a soft spot for him as well. But, you know, Rex is just an innocent, he's innocent, and no matter what he's doing, he sparks up the screen. And it's hard not to have a soft spot for him.
Bruce?
Just wondered, why do you think it is that established actors, actresses, so enjoy doing voice work? And also, across 15 years, do people's voices change slightly as they get older? So the pitch slightly.
Right. Well, in terms of the voices changing, very few changed. Pretty much everybody sounded exactly the same. And a testament to that is that I went back into recordings of both Tim Allen and Tom Hanks from the original Toy Story, and I used bits of them. There were some times where I needed a line said in a different way than what we had. I needed a word, you know, to pull. And I was able to seamlessly intercut between them, so they really didn't change. In terms of actors being interested in doing the films, it used to be more difficult to convince actors to do our films before we were a name and people could trust that a Pixar film was going to be of a certain quality. But now pretty much everyone we ask wants to
be on board. Now want to be a part of it. I think that especially people, I mean, it started with, from my memory, is when we did the extras on the Bugs Life DVD, and people met John and Andrew and Lee and everybody for the first time and saw their thought process. And so a lot of people who really want to be a part of, you know, high-end filmmaking and wanted to be a part of Pixar, and that's when we really started getting the phone calls. Mm-hmm. And I'd say, well, now why did you call? And so, oh, I just got through watching the extras on a Bugs Life DVD.
Yeah.
And really fell in love with the guys.
The actors like it because it's I won't say it's easy, but they don't have to go on location. They don't have to wear costumes. They don't have to wear makeup. They can just show up. But, yeah, that being said, it's difficult in a lot of ways because they don't have those things around them.
Well, I assumed it would be an interesting challenge for them.
Well, and it definitely is a challenge because most times they're having to act in a void. They have me. I'm reading lines off of them, and I'm doing my best, but I'm not an actor. And I have to somehow paint a picture for them so that they can go internal, standing in a dark room in front of a microphone and kind of put themselves in the scene.
Tom Hanks continuously says it's the hardest thing he's ever done, and still is.
Well, it's grueling. He'll do 5 hours at a time of just, you know, doing line readings for 5 hours. And it's not like that in live action.
It's condensed and focused. So
we're going to wind things up with that last quick question from Ira.
John Ratzenberger obviously holds a unique place in Pixar history. When it's not a Toy Story film, it's always obvious which character he'll play. When does that decision get made in the process? And could you conceive a Pixar film without him?
I don't think we'll make a Pixar film without him at this point, unless we make a movie that has like one character in it and he's not right for it. No, we don't always know right away. We always know we need to find someone at some point, some character for him to be. Some of the parts have been bigger than others, but we always seem to find a spot for him.
And on that vote of confidence from John's fan club, Lee and Darla, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you.
Well, there you go. That pretty much rounds up this edition of the show. Slightly longer show than normal, coming in just over an hour and 50 at the moment. But we wanted to really make sure we covered Toy Story 3 properly and give you that opportunity to listen to everything that was said at that press conference. I'm sure you'll agree. Loads of really interesting things. We'd like to thank our sponsors, Attraction Tickets Direct and Complete Orlando, for once again sponsoring the show, as they have done for so long now. Thanks to Juz and Craig for joining me, as they always do. And also, just tell you to make sure to email us your questions, comments and suggestions. Do that at podcast@disneybrit.com, and we do continue to answer your emails over there. You can ring our voicemail on 0121 288 2858 in the UK and Europe, and 407 545 7980 in the US. Please do continue to ring in. We do want those birthday messages from you for our 2-year anniversary show. Just a reminder that the end of July is the cutoff date. All those voicemails. Make sure you check out our website, disneybrit.com, and check out our Facebook page at Disney Brit fan page as well, where you can also friend up myself, Juz and Craig. We spend a lot of time over on Facebook posting things for the show, links to Disney things, etc. So do please go over there and check those out. Leave us a review on iTunes, as many people have been doing, which is fantastic. We've still got our YouTube channel. You can still buy copies of the Minnie Mouse from Amazon in the US and in the UK, places such as Waterstones, Borders and WH Smith's. And please continue to check out our sister podcast at Eye on Orlando. You can visit our forum. We've got loads of stuff going on the forums as well. You'll find out about things such as live chats and stuff that we do. That's eyeonorlando.com/forum. Check that out there. Really, that is it. That leaves me nothing else to say other than the next show will be released on Wednesday, the 4th of August. So until then, I'll see you.